Okay, with Marcus Nel Jamal Hand, Drigger 2.0 is the short film. He is the co-director. You are the writer, you are the producer, and you're also one of the actors in the film as well, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Did you do catering as well in the movie or
Believe it or not, actually, I did.
Okay, so was there, this is Trigger 2.0. Was there a Trigger 1.0?
There was Trigger 1.0 also was part of the Wild Sound
Yep.
community. We did
I
that
knew
one,
that. I'm
and
just setting up the question, but go ahead. Yeah.
oh, absolutely, yeah. So there definitely was a part one. It was definitely a bittersweet labor of love. Part one was actually written to help ensure that it was completed in time before the lead in our project left us. We knew that his time was short, and we revamped the script so that we can kind of expedite getting it completed. So actually, 2.0 is a revision of what would have been the original story.
Oh wow, and who is the actor that you're referencing?
So his name is Stephen James Tingus. He played the villain in part one. The character's name is the director.
Okay.
And that's the only character, well, one of the only characters who is an original character. All the other characters are based off of Marvel-themed
Gotcha.
characters. Yep.
So you play Blade in the film, right?
I did, yes.
And then there's Wolverine, and there's
Yeah, Bishop, both bishops. A lot of people are familiar with Lucas Bishop, and he goes by the name Bishop, but that's actually his last name. But in the comic books, there's actually their brother and sister duo, Bishop, Lucas and Shard Bishop. So I brought in Shard, which is a hologram. It's a very interesting, long story short, she passed in the comic books, but lives on as a hologram. So in our film, she comes out as a hologram and helps Bishop by being able to have those kind of extra abilities.
Then you have Sabretooth,
Yep.
Deadpool, right? And
Yep.
then Rogue, right? To
And
name a
Rogue
few.
was in. She was in part one, and in part two, we learned some interesting news about her.
So this is like obviously if this is what you would call a fan film or a fan fiction film, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And
Go ahead.
my history with fan films goes back to one of the most popular directing duos, Bat in the Sun Productions. It's the Shonky father and son duo.
Okay.
They've done what was known as superhero beatdowns back in the day, G12 Network. They would bring in all these characters from different universes and have the audience vote on who they thought would be the best, who would win between, let's say, like Wolverine versus Wonder Woman, for example.
Yeah.
But these guys also produced their own fan film, mostly based off of Batman. But they at one time also helped revitalize Valiant Comics, and they created a web series called Ninjax versus the Valiant Universe, and I got to be a part of that. Just had a small role in it, but I was inspired by these guys. I was a fan of theirs for many, many years. Oftentimes, you'll see people watch these fan films and actually comment that in some ways they're more entertaining than some of the big budget
Yeah.
productions. So I've been a fan of Blade since the first movie came out. I have a long history of trying to revitalize Blade in the years that Blade was not being talked about. I actually came very close to developing a live action stunt show. I'm also a professional wrestler and actor, so I actually got to the front door of making that possible, but the terms and conditions were not something that we were able to come to an agreement on. So many years later, the decision was, if I'm going to ever produce a project that involves me portraying Blade, number one, I'm going to have to produce it and write it myself. And number two, it's going to have to be in the form of a fan film, because fan films kind of walk a slippery slope legally. I've talked to attorneys and, tried to understand how these other guys were able to do a fan film. And my understanding has always been, ultimately, it's up to the productions. They generally don't bother directors and producers who do fan films, but at any time they could if they chose to. So it's
Well, it's
just
free
smart.
advertisement, right? So
Exactly.
yeah. And then it's like yeah, you don't like you're not gonna like if you're not long as you're not making money from it, that's the whole thing, right? So like if it goes on YouTube, it's gonna get flagged, right?
It could, yeah. I
Yeah,
mean,
we'll get a
I've
copyright strike.
seen.
So then so basically the any money that gets revenued will go to the owners of the characters, I guess, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's on up to them as well. I mean, I think the reason that Bat and the Sun Productions was kind of the template for me is I think they figured out how to monetize fan films, and it primarily has to do with crowdfunding. These guys built an audience mainly from the time that they spent on the network previously, but also because even their viral fan films generated such a large audience that people they'll go on their social media and announce, "Hey, we can make Iron Man versus Optimus Prime if you guys donate, $500,000," and they'll reach the goal.
Just
And
because there's such a
it
huge fan base, right? So out
yeah,
there, like, and but Blade showed up in the Deadpool movie, right? He
he
came
did.
back.
And what's crazy is that we actually completed our project prior to that film being released, and I had no idea that they had intended to bring Blade into
It
that
was kind of a
film.
secret, right? They
Yeah, it
kind
was a
of
secret.
perhaps, yeah.
Yeah, and it was obviously a pleasant surprise, but I just remember thinking, wow, I mean, part of the reason I did this project is because I thought no one's going to ever get to see this. See Wolverine and Blade, they've been in the comic books for many, many different
You know they're gonna
times.
get to it eventually though, right? Like that's
Yeah.
there's like do you think there's like a little quick segue question? Do you think there's like comic book superhero burnout, film burnout?
I think it's a marathon kind of situation. I think that
Okay.
there are periods where people do get tired.
What
But
mile are they in then if it's a marathon
I
situation?
think Deadpool and Wolverine was a prime example of how there was this fatigue for a good little while. They had kind of a string of movies that weren't really hitting the mark, and then that movie came out, and it kind of just gave them a third or fourth wind, and now they got the Doomsday coming out, and I know that's going to be a huge, huge deal.
Well, the dude, the Wolverine, sorry, the Deadpool Wolverine, it was almost like a meta film or like they're kind of making fun of themselves,
Yeah,
right?
I personally, after you kind of let the excitement died down, when you really look at the film, you realize that ultimately none of these characters were Marvel characters. These were all characters from all the previous, 20th Century Fox films, who, like you said, were they're kind of giving them kind of a farewell and also inviting their Deadpool and Wolverine into the Marvel universe. But ultimately, what you saw was a movie that wasn't an actual Marvel, it's an MCU movie. It was kind of a transition. So I think that's their goal now, is to appeal to the audiences who, want the nostalgia, because I think it was inspired by the Spider-Man,
100%.
Tobey Maguire. Yeah,
1,000%.
once they saw that reaction, they just said, "This is what we got to do, guys. We got to get all these characters from the older films. That generation is now older. The younger generation are just starting to watch those older films, and they're loving them." So,
I think we're the
even
same age, so we remember like when the first Spider-Man film came. We were in our 20s when the first
yep.
Spider-Man film came out, and
Yeah.
then they did the Fantastic Four, Chris Evans's character in the Deadpool,
Right.
but and they're gonna I think they're gonna do that again. Like the Fantastic Four, they just like they're they got they want to hit a home run with that franchise, and they keep failing every time, right? So.
Yeah, I'm literally been watching it today, part two with Silver Surfer, and I'm watching it just thinking, this
Oh, you're
actually
watching it
feels,
today.
Yeah, I actually
Yeah.
decided just to turn it on earlier today, and I'm just
Yeah.
watching it thinking that this is actually pretty good, you know. Like,
Yeah.
it still stands the test of time as far as I'm concerned, and Silver Surfer especially. I mean, Lawrence Fishburne played the voice, and Doug Jones, you know, played the character. You can't really go wrong with that. So,
Yeah.
you know, it's definitely a little campy, but it feels
That's
very
yeah.
similar to what we're seeing today in a lot of these Marvel
But
films.
that's the thing, right? Where like we're like in a general sense, like I'm not a like a super fan. I'm like a film, I guess, history buff kind of guy, so I'm looking at it from
Yeah.
that perspective. But like, so you got the Batman movies of the 90s, which were campy, kind of like for kids, right?
Right.
They were like McDonald's, Burger King kind of franchise films, meaning that they were literally selling like Happy Meals
Right.
while selling the film. And then the Fantastic Four came around like 2004, and it was still in that gray area, right? And
Yeah.
then the Batman movie came out, where like it's like, okay, we're grounded, now we're in reality, we're making this serious movie about this comic book guy. And of course,
Right.
like Marvel caught on, and then they basically made everything serious
Yeah.
afterwards. Now it's too serious. We're like, come on, they're comic book characters, and this is my
Yeah,
perspective, right? Not
yeah.
yours. They're
There's a
like,
happy
okay,
medium.
let's like you're not like, come on, you're not legends, you know what I mean? Let's like hamper down the it's almost like elitism in a sense. And now
Yeah.
they're not now they're coming full circle, like let's be campy again, I guess,
Yeah.
right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, and that's what I shot for myself. You
Yeah.
know, I
Yeah.
appreciate that's what the feedback that I got was so it felt so good because it was exactly what I was aiming to accomplish,
Yeah.
was telling a story that it had a sci-fi element, it had a horror element, but ultimately we wanted people to laugh and have fun watching it, you know.
So the first one, this one's better than the, like, if I'm gonna like better, but basically you can see the production value is a little bit stronger. You can see
Yeah.
that the storytelling and like the direction's a little bit stronger. Like it seems like you guys learned something, learned a lot from your first film. Is that a correct assessment?
I would say so for sure. I mean, again, the first one was something that we really just wanted to make it enjoyable, but it was a story I literally wrote in a single day.
Okay.
And it was a single location as well. It was a studio that's no longer in that location anymore, but that studio had all these different sets, and I wrote the story based on the sets that were there,
Gotcha. Mark.
which was a lot of fun, but it was
Yeah.
very condensed. It was, you know, just it was a tight story.
Yeah.
And part two, we were much more open. We had multiple different locations. I learned a lot more, you know, about the characters and where I wanted to take the story. And since it was technically the original story, it was a lot easier to kind of play with it and you know, be more a little in, more in depth.
Yeah, it's there, and you can see it's just a stronger kind of like stronger direction too, right? Like where it's like it's you guys like it seems like you guys like kind of practice your craft a little bit. So you I say you guys because it's your Mario
Yeah,
Ricardo
Mario
Rodriguez.
Ricardo Rodriguez. Yeah.
So where did you meet him? Where did you guys how did you guys collaborate?
You know, it's originally I met him through a mutual friend. He used to direct, I don't know if you heard of Darman.
No.
It's a kind of viral series. It's been on for many years, but
Okay.
it's like morality tales. They're like skits that come on like YouTube and things like that. Very popular with younger audiences. So I had a friend who worked with Darman, and she introduced me to Mario, and I kind of told him my vision, what we're looking to accomplish, and he's a USC film school graduate, you
Okay.
know. He got it right away, and his attention to making it possible was impeccable. I mean, we worked way later than we should have. You know, we collaborated in many ways before we ever stepped foot on a set. And with this one as well, the work that he put into it to make it possible, it's like I'm just the guy with the vision. You know, I co-directed in the sense that I, you know, obviously was involved also with post-production, and even while on set, everything was
Yeah.
being guided, but Mario is the one with the technical prowess and the ability to kind of bring what I wrote down to
Yeah.
life. And to be able to do that with a fantasy sci-fi comic book movie, I mean, part of the reason I think we're winning so many awards is because there's very few people who can kind of create a formula that can pull that off with no budget and
Yeah.
still somehow manage to make it look like it's, a lot more money being spent than it was.
Yeah, and it's one of those where like dynamics too, where like the guy's playing who's playing Wolverine, we have emotional context to the guy who plays him in the Hollywood movies, right? So it's hard to like
Right.
for the audience to kind of switch their mindset into this
Yeah.
reality. But I think you guys achieved it. That's why I'm bringing like I think you guys did a great job with it. So.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Yeah. And Fernando Marrero, he and I both have a professional wrestling background. He's also an
I want
MMA
to talk to you
fighter.
about that later, but let's talk
Yeah.
about your film right now. Yeah.
Of course, sure.
I'm a big fan. I'm a fan of wrestling. So yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, but okay. So tell me about the rest of the cast. Like, where did you find the rest of the cast?
Actually, what's crazy is that the bulk of my cast, I'm also involved with another project called The Sins, which is the Seminole Indian Negro Scouts. And the actual order is Seminole Negro Indian Scouts. This is all true story, the late 1800s. This is the first ever Special Forces. I've been working with this director by the name of Lovie Ray Johnson Jr. And we actually are doing our own stunts. We've been training with horses since 2022. We go to a ranch called D6 Ranch, run by a gentleman by the name of Ty Nitti. And the majority of my cast I've met at the ranch. The ranch is a very sacred place.
Oh,
It's
wow.
a lot of professional actors that want to learn and or just enjoy being out in that environment tend to be out there. So many of the cast that I have were actually involved with that project or who were directly involved with the ranch. But outside of that, it was people that I knew prior from my either pro wrestling days or who I've met, kind of in kind of other ways through networking as an actor.
Wow, that's amazing. And
Yeah.
so, but so it's like, so this ranch is just like where people can just like go and like kind of wind down a little bit, or like what's the agenda?
It's actually the ranch, a ranch for the Ty trains these horses for film and television. So
Okay.
this is basically like a film production ranch.
And they hire
He's
the
actually
horses out like for like westerns and things like that.
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Okay.
actually the horse that Jamie Foxx used in Django,
Django, yeah.
he had he's not there now. I think Jamie actually has the horse back now, but that horse was there for some time. Incredible horse. I mean, all the rest of the horses look like horses, and that horse looked like it was something out of a comic book himself, just like
Yeah.
muscles on muscles.
Yeah. So they must love when it's like, oh, there's this big budget Westerns coming to Hollywood. They must like, yeah, okay.
Oh,
Here,
absolutely.
yeah.
I think this actually opened the door for them. They hadn't done a lot of films prior to us working with them on The
Okay.
Sins. And now I think I was just at the ranch this past Wednesday. I think he mentioned that they've done roughly about 30 or so productions in that time. They did one about Alexander the Great recently. There's other productions that just send their cast there to train, to learn to ride horses. So it's definitely growing. He's actually building sets now on the location so that it can be not just to train but also to film on site as well.
Okay, so then, so you, what about the so all the locations for this film? Where were the like? How did you get the locations for this particular film? Because it's like you're kind of in
This
a kind of like a world, a different kind of cave world or whatever
yeah.
that's been
So
created.
most of where we shot at was actually downtown Los Angeles. There's a studio that had, and it's crazy because I like I mentioned previously that I wrote the script around the existing set
Yeah.
pieces for part one. This
Yeah.
time I wrote this without knowing where we were going to be filming. And I found a location that actually had a cabin, had sci-fi sets, had a dungeon. So everything was mostly shot there. And One trick to being a independent short filmmaker is that if you have a big scene, shoot the big scene first, because if you can get that one completed and you start running out of money, it's there's still a chance you can shoot the rest of it. So we shot the ending first because that involved everybody. It was probably the most fun shoot day, and we definitely went over by 2 or 3 hours. But we got it all in there. I did have to take out some of the, elements I wanted to put in there. Still kind of regret some of it, but I'm really happy with how we were able to complete it. Outside of that location, we did one gorilla shot for the flashback where the Wolverine is training with his master, Lord Ogen. And then we had another location that was in the valley, where we had the actual fight between Wolverine and Blade take place.
Gotcha. And then, so I'm, do you want me, am I allowed to talk about the ending or no? Do you want to give it away or no?
Just fine, and in part because we're going to kind of create a director's cut that's going to be officially released in the future. So there's going to be more that people will be able to see.
All I was gonna say is that Deadpool shows up, so you're like, so
Yeah,
you got
that's
other
fine.
characters. That's why you have to shoot the ending first because all the everybody's showing up. But then
Exactly.
he gets his head chopped off, I guess, right?
That's right.
Which
That was definitely
I
the most
don't like the
fun.
character, so I was happy to watch it.
I think that's the point of Deadpool, is just to abuse them. I have some ideas to take that to a whole nother level, but and you have characters who are indestructible and annoying. You got to beat them up on camera, like, otherwise, what's the point?
So then, yeah, that was fun. So tell me about, okay, then, so there's lots of post-production, like obviously the ending with his head cut off and he's like a chicken. He's like walking with like a chicken. And then, so obviously that can't be done in real life. So you got to be done, do that in post. Like, well, even the Doctor Who-ish kind of like, ooh, like we're going in this like vortex of like humanity at the end. So this is all done in post-production. Did you have
Correct.
like a post-production, guru, I guess, to help you out with all that stuff?
Absolutely. So the secret to my success in making sci-fi fantasy is Q Logic Entertainment. That's the name of the production house that I work with. They're based in Texas. I've been working with them pretty much with all of my projects. The first time we worked together, it was, we had to figure each other out. It was a very laborious. I was literally going back and forth with them every single day. And this time for part two, they figured me out. I remember just being shocked that they would send me stuff and it would be like exactly what I was looking for. It almost reminds me of how AI works now, where you can just, type in ChatGPT and just say, this is what I want, and then it'll just generate it. Like, that's what it felt like making part two with these guys. It was
To be fair,
very.
it's not that easy to chat to GPT. You have to finesse everything.
It's still learning us, but it's definitely the fact that it didn't exist when I made this film, it's just crazy to me.
And so are you gonna make another film? Are you gonna make a sequel to this film?
What I'm shooting next, and I already have the script, and I'm actually have a big name involved as well. Since he's not officially signed on, I'm kind of hesitant to say the name of the actor, but I will say that they're very excited to be a part of it. And if it does all work out, which it seems like it will, it's just going to add an extra layer of excitement about the overall project. But what I'm filming isn't so much a part three as it is creating a beginning, an official ending, and the finale of what happens after the end of part 2.0. So you're going to see exactly what happens from where we left off. And then there's a final part that we're shooting that also serves as the opening of the film. And I haven't decided exactly how I'm going to incorporate part one into the final cut. Just because it is, giving something away, a dream. It's a memory implant. So I don't want to necessarily, I kind of see it as an Easter egg potentially. I think audiences, I want to tell a story that just is, that flows very smoothly.
Yeah.
And I think giving audience the opportunity to just say, well, I want to see what else Wolverine saw in that dream sequence. Give them the, let them see that film separately. And maybe just incorporate a few more, a little bit more of the film into the dream sequence, when he's having his flashbacks.
So you mentioned the film is, you said it at the festivals, it's getting some awards, it's doing well.
It
Like, how does that make you feel? You excited?
goes, it, this is, it exceeds any of my expectations when I
That's
started
good.
doing this. I've never said this in any interview before, but ultimately, I am someone who moved to LA as an actor. And about a few years in, circumstances required me to get a full-time job. So I actually work in property management.
Okay.
And when I got into that field, I had to pull away. I was with a creative artist agency, and I told him I can't just go the way I used to be able to just go. I was working security jobs. If I had to go, I would just tell my boss, I'm sorry, I got to go
Yeah.
for auditions. So I basically put in the time in my field to where now I have accumulated time off. I've accumulated enough, to not worry about what's going to happen if I have to take some time off to shoot a project. And in the process, I became more inspired to write and to produce my own works after having worked with several of my, friends who've done the same things, as independent filmmakers. So when I started making films, it literally was with the intention of just kind of not wasting all the time and energy that I put into being a creative, being an actor, and just be giving myself opportunities. Time is short. We've learned that lesson so many times. Lost people. We've seen, so many stories of people saying, "I wish, I wish, I wish." It was entirely just my goal, just to say, "I did this." And when I started submitting into festivals, I didn't even, just the fact that it's a fan film led me to
Yeah.
assume that we didn't really have much of a shot. And there's plenty of festivals, I think, that did scoff at just the fact that it was a fan
Sure.
film.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden we started seeing like these festivals that I've, that people that I respect and, who have won in these festivals, we're winning in the same festivals. And just this past Saturday, we had one of our second biggest accomplishments that is actually equal, because IndieX Fest, they do monthly awards, and we both, and for both part one and two, we won a monthly award, but also for part one and two, we won Best Fantasy Short of the Year.
That's amazing.
And that's incredible. I mean, for this second one, I actually got to see the other two. And you got to keep in mind, that means there are 12 films that won. And they picked the top three for this, annual awards. And in two separate years, we show up. And I don't know why, but in both cases, I came ready and my whole cast showed up. That doesn't always happen for these things. And I'm wearing a tuxedo. I'm like, I hire a photographer, and I have no idea what's going to happen. But I just, my spirit just says, Marcus, don't lay on this. Don't sleep on this. You guys did something that's, quality. You have just as good a shot as anyone else. And both occasions, they call our film. And, an entire movie theater full of our peers, hundreds of people clapping and cheering. And, we're given opportunity to speak. That doesn't happen a lot in the festival circuit. So, I mean, it literally felt like the Oscars, in that sense of, getting that acknowledgement in this large, environment, and being able to celebrate it with the cast and crew it's a feeling that I never imagined I was going to experience. At best, maybe as an actor, winning something, and I've won awards as an actor, but to win for a film that you've invested so much into, your time, your money, your creativity, it's almost like saying, you didn't waste your time.
Yeah.
And to think of, like, one of the films that we were up against had actors that were in Pirates of the Caribbean. I recognized them from that, and I just thought, there's no way we're beating this. You know, it's a Western that had to do with werewolves, and the other one was a very stunt oriented Western. And at the end of it, they looked at our work and said that we were deserving. So at this point, it just tells me that not only are you on the right track, but it's time to take this to another level. So my ultimate goal from here is to produce a feature film that's not, you know, related to Marvel themed characters, and really take all of this accolades and all the, you know, all the energy and put it into something that we can produce and hopefully get released in theaters or at least through, you know, later distribution.
That makes total sense. You're learning a lot from like the story. Listen, it's not easy to make a fan fiction film because you're, like I said, you're it's hard for people to like think fourth dimensionally and like kind of like your character, like you're the new Blade, right? So it's like, and then also too, where it's like you're gotta you the, this is the fickle fan base, right? They're like they like to talk and they like to like type and talk negativity, spew negativity. No offense to the fan,
Yeah,
but there's
no,
the
you're
fickle fan
absolutely right.
base, and so they and
And
it's
that
hard to
was
like
my
get their
concern.
if you get their approval, then you're like then you can do anything as far as I'm
Yeah.
concerned, right?
Yeah. And I recently attended a comic convention dressed as the character Blade that I portrayed in the film. And there's a gentleman who does art for Blade and he sells it. And he saw me and he gave me this and said, "This is a trophy to me. Like, I'm giving this to you because this is the best live action version of Blade that I have seen since Wesley Snipes." And I also met a
You should have
gentleman
told him
who
you should have told him you are Blade. I am Blade.
practiced.
Representation. This, I am the guy. What are you talking about?
And that's, and Blade is the touchiest of all, you know, if, I mean, of all the superheroes, you know, aside from Wolverine and Hugh Jackman, Wesley Snipes, in the minds of every single fan of Blade, you know, they feel that he's the only Blade. So it's a huge compliment to have films, multiple films that have won awards portraying Blade. And you know, one of the going back to Bat and the Sun Productions and their Batman themed fan films, Kevin Porter is the actor who plays their Batman, and he has a following of people who will always say that he's the best live action portrayal. And I would never want to take the mantle from Wesley Snipes, but it was always my hope that when we do ultimately release this publicly, that at least fans will say that he's the fan fiction Blade, you know, who's worthy of carrying that mantle, you know.
So before I leave you, I want to ask you, you said that you came, you were you a wrestler before you were an actor?
I was, yeah, that's
You
that. I didn't even want to be an actor initially. In 99, I got into professional wrestling. I was still in college, and I worked with Maryland Championship Wrestling out in Maryland, obviously in Maryland.
Yeah.
And almost immediately upon graduating from their academy, Bone Breakers Academy, there was a hip hop themed wrestling show in California, where I live now, that was looking for talent. And myself and my former tag team partner, Orlando Jordan, we were picked up immediately. We were basically their headliners. We were the main eventers. We won the tag team championship. We were the only championship title holders on a show called Urban Wrestling Alliance.
How long did
It
that
was on.
last, the Urban Wrestling Alliance?
It was a year. We did one full season, and it just ran its syndication for a couple of years on UPN, which no longer exists anymore.
Because
But
this is when wrestling was like gigantic, right? Like
it was when it
it's
was
cheaper
gigantic.
now, but it's like it was like that's that was like the what do you call it? The
The Nitro Raw War, the Monday Night Raw Wars. That's when
it's
we
the
were out.
term. I just like totally got a brain freeze. The not the Ruthless the aggression era, the what
Oh
era was
yeah,
it?
Attitude
Attitude
Era.
era. Why did it take me so long to the Attitude era, right? So yeah.
John Cena at that time was still the prototype. You know, it just he was a student at the place that we were shooting at. And he had just debuted, him and Randy Orton had just debuted around the same time that our show came out. So I myself didn't go to WWE, but
Was
Rocky
that your
Johnson
goal?
was our trainer. There, it was at a time, but honestly, what the reason I didn't pursue it more aggressively is Rocky Johnson, The Rock's father, and also WWE Hall of Famer, he was the one who kind of was our gateway. And he basically came to me saying, because of my size, at that time I was like 6'1", like 205. And he said, guys your size are not going to be main event. You're going to be on the B team. You're going to
Daniel
be on
Bryan was it's like 5'8". What are you talking about?
the. Yeah, well,
He's
that's
long
the
as that.
thing. It's like, there's plenty of people who proved that wrong, but at that time, that his being the father of The Rock, you're obviously going to, look for people that kind of resemble that build. And when he told me that, and I still had to finish college, I just decided, let me finish college. And the opportunity kind of was, that was the strongest opportunity for me, is if I had gone at that time. So after I finished school, I just went a different direction, and I became an actor, because while I was in college, my acting teacher was the one who actually said, "You're not a wrestler, you're an actor." I did a
Well,
scene from
wrestlers are
Chicago.
actors in many ways during your films,
Exactly.
right? One take, right?
Right. Exactly. It's live theater, it's stunt theater.
So let
But I
me
ended
ask
up
you, like,
on HBO's The Wire, and that's what got me out to LA.
so let me ask you, like, when the guys, like the guy you're watching, like the wrestling now, and like Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, etc., CM Punk. How great are they, like, of what they're doing? Like you, I'm sure, I'm sure, I'm obviously you're seeing things that we're not seeing, right? We're just enjoying the show. So, like, how, like, are they, like, how hard is it what they do? I guess that's the better question. Like, is it
I don't think
extremely
I
difficult?
consider professional wrestlers superhuman. I mean, even at being one myself, I mean, I did it for that 1 year as like a full-time kind of contracted wrestler, but outside of that, as an independent wrestler, you can, shoot shows are like kind of a month or two apart sometimes. Some wrestlers, they travel and they work. Anyone who does it as consistently as these guys do and maintain their physiques and maintain their health, I mean, it's superhuman. I mean, and to be able to always get, the one takes live TV, they go straight from like a big main event, like hour long match on a pay-per-view, to the next night, having a follow-up match, and then the following night going to a local place that doesn't even air it, where they're wrestling even longer, because when it's not on TV, you have a longer time to
It's not
perform.
as bad as it used to be, though, right? They don't really do live shows anymore or like in-house shows. Like they get a lot of rest now. Like, but I understand.
Yeah, I've heard a lot has changed. Part of the reason why I didn't pursue WWE more, because back then, we know all the stories that were happening with a lot of
People
premature
died. People were dying
deaths.
young.
Yeah,
Drug.
and one of the first projects that I actually tried as a producer when I came to LA was to do a documentary about that. And I ended up coming very close to producing a show that would have involved the late Afa, the Wild Samoan, and his family. And it was regretful, but the producers that I was working with really converted what my initial intention was entirely to basically a Osbournes type show. And ultimately, because they basically said that now the Kardashians is the big thing at that time, they didn't think that what we were trying to do was going to be as exciting to
And you think
audiences.
that then like 10 years later, the Total Divas, right? Like, is a
Right.
monster hit, like Total Bellas, like
Yeah.
wrestling re
Yeah.
reality
And
show, right?
it's always been about timing with this
It's
industry,
always about timing, always. Even
So,
right? Like if you're 10 years later and then you Daniel Bryan and like and Eddie Guerrero and et cetera, these guys are like 5'8", 5'9", and they're like headlining WrestleMania, then you're 6'1", whatever, right? Handsome guy, like you know what I mean? They like
I very easily could have been in a very, similar position
exactly.
if I had gotten out there. But
That's funny.
no love lost. I do still wrestle with Knox Pro Entertainment, which is run by Rikishi from that era, from
Yeah,
the
the
Attitude Era.
Uso brothers' dad, right? Yeah. He's always mad about his son's not getting the fair shake, right? Did he
Yeah, I
talk
just
to you
saw
about it?
his.
Yeah.
I didn't talk to him directly about it, but I just shared his rant that he just put out about
Jay lost the title on Monday
it.
as we're doing this podcast. Yeah.
It's all a show,
It is a
and
show.
I think the fact that his entire family are all part of the main event. I mean,
Yeah. Well, those guys are
Roman, all of
they
them
did it.
are family.
Yeah. They did an amazing job with the what do you call it, the bloodline. Pretty good.
It's a great storyline. Jacob Fatu,
Yeah.
I actually wrestled him.
Oh, did you?
I wrestled him, Rikishi, Count Black Pearl, and a main event match for Rikishi's 50th birthday a few years
Wow.
ago.
So
It's
Jacob,
like around
like he's
2017.
a hell of an athlete, that guy.
He's incredible. He's
For his
incredible.
size. Like you
Yeah,
like
he was
how is
so
he
happy
not
to
hurting
be
these guys?
able
Like he's so careful, like right? Like the
to do
way
it.
he does the spins and stuff. Like in Bron Breakker, like let me ask you, like when Bron Breakker does that, how does he not hurt the guy?
It's the thing. It's not that he's not hurting them. It's just that they at least figure out a way to do it where it's not
The
putting them in the
bump is
hospital.
light. It's a light
But there's
bump, I
no
guess.
way to not. You're gonna feel it.
Yeah.
There's never been a match I've wrestled that didn't feel like I was in a car accident.
Oh,
And
okay,
that's why I
gotcha.
say that these guys are superhuman. Because personally, I can't imagine going back to another match immediately after finishing a big match.
Yeah.
I had to
That's why
wrestle.
they were
I
doing
wrestled in
drugs.
Vegas.
That's why they're
Yeah,
doing
that's why
drugs,
they
right?
take
Yeah.
the pain pills and all
Yeah.
that stuff. And thankfully, there's more ways that aren't as dangerous for people to heal up with the ice baths and all these homeopathic what methods and things like that. See a lot less abuse these days, a lot less tragic stories being told. So they definitely figured something out, including getting more time off.
They get a lot of time off now, yeah. So
Yeah.
you still watch the product then, I guess.
I do. Yeah, I still watch it. I won't say as intensely as I
Of
used to,
course,
but I
yeah.
still try to keep up with it. I definitely still watch the pay-per-views. I
It's
don't even think
better.
they
I think
call them
it's the
pay-per-views.
best it's ever been. I think it's
Yeah.
like the
Yeah, there's in
last
a lot of
couple
ways they've figured a lot of things out to make it more coherent and more consistent in
too many
storytelling.
commercials and like in not enough matches in the pay-per-view, but like, come on, like they have 15-minute commercials, right? They're
Yeah.
fleecing people. And
Well,
it's
now
like,
you see that the ring is covered with advertisements. That's
well,
never
Vince
happened
McMahon would have hated that. But it's changed, like he had to go, right? Like for many
before.
reasons.
Yeah. For
And
many
but
reasons,
like but now it's the now it's done by it's like done by a corporation. So it's like Major League Baseball or football. It's like it's a
yeah.
corporation now. They care about the bottom line, they care about the money, right? And
Exactly.
so that they take care of the wrestlers, but at the same time, they're like money grabbing the hell out of people, right? So,
Yeah. And I've heard that, so you heard about the Ron Killings thing, the R-Truth thing, and him getting fired, and
yeah,
then they
he did
brought him
get fired.
back.
That wasn't a work.
Yeah,
Triple H
it
is a
wasn't a work.
fucking liar. Yeah,
Right.
right. Yeah.
And the thing is that they're doing that with a lot of their older talent, is they're
It's,
trying to
yeah.
fire them and convince them to come back with a lower bottom
Yeah.
line on their contracts.
Like they need to be unionized, like just like the actors, right? But they'll never will be, but they need to be
No. And
unionized.
that's exactly what my documentary was going to be about. I
Yeah.
actually was putting together a 501c. I talked to AFTRA before SAG-AFTRA merger. I talked to a couple of gentlemen from AFTRA, and we had a dinner conversation. And the entire time I explained to them how the wrestling industry worked, their jaws were like hitting the floor.
Yeah.
And I actually reached out to New Jack and RVD and so many other wrestlers, because they basically said if we're going to unionize, we need some big names to get behind this, and not a single one was willing. New Jack was the funniest. He actually put me on, and he's passed now, RIP.
Yeah.
He put me on hold. He puts us on three-way and told me don't speak, and he contacted someone high up in the industry and kind of just pitched to him what my idea was, and he just let me listen. And it was obviously just him saying this will never work. It'll
No.
they'll it'll all be blacklisted. And Alpha the Wild
Can't quit.
Samoan, when I spoke to him about it, he actually attempted that many years ago in his earlier days. And
Didn't Jesse Ventura try to do it as
Jesse
well?
Ventura tried it as well.
And listen, the people don't know, like it's like, well, like the like say like NBA or football, NFL, it's collectively bargained. So meaning that the owners get 50, it's like I say the NBA, the owners get 50% of the profits, the players get 50% of the profit, collectively bargained, right? Never gonna happen in wrestling.
No,
It's
no.
but the only way it could happen is if someone so strong, like say Stone Cold back in his day, where he was the number one guy, right? By
Right.
far ahead of everybody else. If he decides, you know what, we got to band together and go union, that's the only way it could happen. So they can't destroy, because he's making everybody money, right? So
Right.
even Vince McMahon would have to concede to Stone Cold back in
Yeah.
1999, for example. But
Yeah.
that's not going to happen because they don't want to do that. They keep the wrestlers, they stretch it thin,
Independent
right?
contractors. Yeah. And it is a revolving door, you
It
know.
is,
It's
it's a scam
there's
because
only
they're
like
like,
a handful of wrestlers who you
they
see
are
year after
acting.
year.
Yeah,
Yeah.
they are acting, right? It's like they have
Right.
backstage acting segments. That's like, and they're not getting
Exactly.
paid. And
Yeah.
then yeah, that it's a BS. Anyways, I can have a whole conversation with you about this, but I appreciate your time, man. It was awesome. Congratulations on the film.
Thank
Amazing.
you very
And
much.
let's talk again when you make your next film.
Absolutely will. Look
Thanks,
forward
man.
to it, and I really appreciate you.
Yeah, of course.